Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Gottfried's Straight No Chaser. This evening, I have brought two of the most wonderful people that I know together for us to have a program this evening, if they behave themselves. They already started messing up already. You can hear them giggling right now. You see, I have to do my cleanup, and then I told them to be quiet during this cleanup, and then we're going to be just fine. So let me just say to you that you are on blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Frank, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. I tell you all of that because tonight's episode, along with almost 40 more, are archived on Block Talk Radio, and you can go back and hear so many other people who have really graced my the program and have made it so much fun to do every week, every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, my guests tonight are on the West Coast again. So we are ahead of them here. We're in the darkness. They're still in great sunshine back there. And I have known them for a great deal of time. But before I get to them, let me just say, if there's anyone who wants to call in, if you're listening for the first time or even for the 40th time, I'll give you the phone number again so that you can call in and press the number 1 if you have a question for them, or even if you just want to say hello because you remember them all the years. And the number is 516-453-6063, and you press the number 1. Now, let me get to my two guests today. I have two of them. They are two wonderful sisters, two wonderful human beings, two wonderful performers that I have known for the better part of my adult life. I met Debbie in a classroom at Hunter College when she was Debbie Austin, not Williams yet. And we were both sitting in an introduction to Black theater that we thought was going to be, I believe, lectured by a gentleman who had done Shaft, but to our surprise, walked in the most historic person in the theater, Mr. Lloyd Richards. And throughout my relationship with her, I got to meet her family, her wonderful parents, and her younger sister, who I now refer to as L.A., and we will find out why it went from the name I used to call her to L.A. in a minute. Okay. So these two have been in my life so much. Let me just tell you a bit of what they've done. Debbie, who I went to Hunter College with, is the artistic director of the Austin Dance Academy, which was first created in New York City over 50 years ago. And it was created by Mrs. Austin. And it offers dances in classes in jazz, tap, African dance, and drumming. Debbie herself, being a wonderful dancer and performer, was the dance consultant in Spike Lee's film, Malcolm X, and has danced all over the world, New York, Hawaii, Las Vegas. But then there's Linda, the younger sister. Now, we all know younger sisters always be trying to hang out with somebody, always want to be with the older sister. Well, Linda really was and is an incredibly talented percussionists. Both of these ladies are native New Yorkers. They both were, when I knew them, lived in Queens, New York, now relocated to the West Coast. Linda, however, along with her sister, both of them work with autistic children, but Linda is a multi-talented, versatile percussionist. She teaches master classes in drum facilitation, creative instructions, and drum specialty. And she has performed with some of the most outstanding people in our business. Dizzy Gillespie, Wynton Marsalis, Norman Miller, Ubi Blake, Ashford and Simpson. She has been on Freddie Jackson's album when he did it with Melba Moore, All My Love. So I am talking to people who I met before they became professionals, and now that they are working actors, I am so, and performers of all kinds, I am so, so very proud of them. Welcome, 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 L.A. and Debbie. Say something.
Well, thank you, Lenny.
Thank you, Ms. Godfrey, my good friend Lenny from Hunter College. I am so, first and foremost, proud of you to give us this opportunity to share some of a little bit of our lives. I just, when I got that email from you, it touched me so deeply because our friendship goes back so long and how we began and through the years. I mean, this is like over 30 years, and to hear from you and how you have expanded your life. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Deb. Well, L.A.?
Yes, Lenny, and I was extremely excited when Debbie told me that you connected with her and wanted to really share the legacy of our lives and the connection of having this dance academy through our incredible mother. Mm-hmm. And it really touched my heart, and I thank you so much for this opportunity.
I want people to understand the accomplishments that your families really have done. Your father was such a supportive figure in all of this. Your mother, of course, had the leadership. And Mrs. Austin was there, and a foreboding figure sometimes. Yeah, you boy. She was serious. But there to realize that you all not only created this in Queens, New York, but then decided to transport it all the way to Las Vegas, Nevada, and it's still going over 50 years. This is absolutely incredible. I compare you to the Gabor sisters, to Debbie Allen and Felicia. I mean, I think that you all belong in that category where people really need to understand how important it was that you all have created this long legacy. So what I want to do in this next little bit of time that we have, I want you to talk about how it started. I want you to go back to the very beginning, the both of you, now, and take turns, okay? Talk about the academy, and was it there when you were a little girl? Did your mother create it while you were here? Where did it come from? I want to talk about Mrs. Austin a little bit. Tell me about her a little bit.
My mom was a fire. Just fire personality. And when she wanted to do something, she's going to find a way to do it. And it was interesting. We started out, myself, taking dance classes, you know, since three, that normal kind of role for her daughter. And I loved it. I was continuing doing dance classes. Fast forward, when I was about, I'd say about 11, 12, living in South Jamaica, Queens, my mom, one day she says, you know what? The little kids on the block, they don't have anything to do on Saturdays. They're outside playing, but what else could they do? Can't they, you know, do some dancing? So I'm like, okay, Ma, yeah. But her idea of having children to do something in a creative way was her passion. My mom, her background wasn't acting. Her background wasn't dance. She wasn't a dancer, but she loved children. So she said, Debbie, and I remember this today, Debbie, teach what you know. I'm like, okay. So
ditto.
I'm 12, 13 years old, dancing and teaching little kids off the block, dancing in my basement. In my basement.
How old were you? You were what, 11, Debbie? How old were you?
Yeah.
LA?
So I was about 7, and the mom just opened the doors to our house, to the community. Really, it was just
it was a revolving door.
Yes. And like Debbie and I were talking about, where did that drive come from for mom? But it was a deep place within her heart and soul for her to always help, especially the underprivileged. So when it came to family, we had this tremendous love. And Ma connecting love and the arts, it was like a key element for Ma to really touch many hearts. And Ma just had the gift of bringing people together. So she always, as Debbie says, she always stressed for us to be better and do more. And she applied it in all the realms of her life, which just we watched her and emulated, you know. And so she just had that positive connection for the youth and for them to experience dance and drama and drumming. And clearly, as almost like what your show is, straight with no chaser, that Ma was very adamant about discipline and respect.
Well, now, so she did not have an artistic background. She wasn't a dancer before. She wasn't a performer before. So you're saying that in a time way before diversity and way before people were concerned about children and community, underserved, you know, communities, your mother decided that she was going to, in her own community, become the headstone of making sure that children had something creative to do. Does that kind of sum it up, kind of what she was doing?
Absolutely.
That's an incredible legacy. Yeah. You know, I mean, this is years before we all are becoming very aware of what is needed in a community. And I think the imagery of that is a very important image to project, because people have a tendency who don't live in our communities to think that we are not a people who were involved in the development of our children and in the development of our communities to be one where we were caretakers of our children. And that in that particular generation especially, I believe, really were at the forefront of that. Now, I have to say, Debbie, you said that you were taking dance. L.A., what were you taking? What started the drumming?
The drum came from just the instrument itself and hearing the drum, because drumming wasn't, you know, interplayed into the school until I, you know, began to teach. But I was just so moved by hearing drums. And so at the age of 9, when Ma used to be cooking in the kitchen, I would go grab the pots and pans. Instead of learning how to cook, I was playing on the pots and pans with wooden spoons.
How incredible.
And Lenny, you know, Ma and Dad, Debbie, nobody ever told me to. Can you just be quiet? I always had the freedom to express myself that way. And until I was 11, and I asked Dad to buy me a drum. And he said, baby, little girls don't play drums, but I'll buy you one. And, you know, Dad was a cop, and he did his night shifts. And he came home one morning, and he put the drum in bed with me. And that
like
was
fairy tale.
I mean, that was it. And then, you know, and so from that early age and the power of the drum, I mean, it just convinced me that with my incredible mother and just what Debbie said, that she encouraged me to teach what you know. And those encouraging words was a profound message that really has guided almost like the trajectory of my life today. Mm-hmm. And I learned giving the rhythm of my life helped many others discover the rhythm of theirs or their voice or whatever that artistry is.
The point of this program is also to highlight people who are in the arts and to really explain to people how the arts has affected their lives. What would your life be if you did not have the arts? Now, Debbie, you start. And then, L.A., I want to hear the story about what L.A. in a minute.
Okay.
Okay. All right, Debbie.
Oh, my gosh.
What would you be? First of all, what took you? I know what drew me to that class at Hunter. I was interested in theater when I was in Hampton University. I thought that the best place to do is to come back to New York City. And this was a course that was offered the first semester that I was available to come back and go into Hunter. What took you to that class that first day?
Well, being elementary, junior high school, going into high school, when I saw Pearlie on Broadway with Melba Moore and Cleavon Little, there was a major change in my life. There was something about seeing our people on a stage and revealing the strength through the artistry. It was something that affected me as a girl, as a little girl. I knew then that's my calling. It was just there. So Hunter, you know, we had the academy, you know, I was taking classes. I remember in high school, I wanted to take a acting class, and it was all the way out in Brooklyn. My mom drove me to that acting class every single day after class in high school. The passion and the love and the support from family or friends, you know, that was the foundation, Lenny. So it was very easy knowing I was going to take an introduction to Black theater in Hunter.
I thought it was so fortuitous that they offered it, and the gentleman who they advertised was the gentleman who was in the opening in one of the opening sequences of Shaft, and I was so very, you know, I mean, he was an actor, and I was so very impressed. And in walks this little man with a cane. And I went, who is this person? This is not the actor. And all of now, basically, this was my 19th birthday. I want you to know. This is my 19th birthday. And I said, well, now, what kind of birthday present is this? Okay. So now everyone else in the class, though, besides a few of us, but most of them knew exactly who he was. And they
ran to him.
And remember, they ran to him. And you and I we had just met, and we just kind of looked at each other like, well, who is this? Then I took my little tail upstairs. This is before Google. And after an hour, realizing this man was so articulate and so knowledgeable, and I was interested in staying in the class because I didn't want to go. But I didn't know what his background was. Went up there to the library and discovered that this was the man who did directed A Raisin in the Sun.
Wow. Amazing.
I was not the dumbest person, you know, around. But how fortunate and blessed were we to have his presence, you know, that he was taking a break before he went to Yale. He was going to be at Hunter for 2.5-3 years. And there he was for us. And it was magnificent. It was an education, an encyclopedia, and I stuck like glue as you did, you know. Those things are, you know, that's fortuitous. It's in the stars to happen. It's in the stars.
And Lenny, growing up in the arts, you just learn these life skills, and for me, drumming encouraged me to have this consistent, strong confidence of me delivering the sound, because it was so male dominated. And so I began drumming is such a self-discovery instrument, because you discover so much about your voice without talking. So mm-hmm. I had a clear understanding of the self-discipline and expressing, you know, on a physical level, but it was also why I was able to create these rhythmic technical expressions with feelings, you know, because it's not about what I teach. It's not about talking. You got to let your voice be heard through your drum, you know.
Exactly.
So I always enjoyed that. And by Mops, I teach what you know, and being self-taught until I was 21 is when I wanted to learn how to read music. And then I studied under the mentorship of master drummer Montego Joe. And mm-hmm. I began to learn the differences of the different rhythms. But even when I went to him, he said, wow, you know what you're doing, you know. But I needed to learn the technique and the different styles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
As far as being called L.A., and kind of, Lenny, it's around that time of when you got married and you asked if Essence All Girl Band could play for your wedding.
Yes.
People
are still talking about that band, and I've been married a long time. That band, that's an all-female band, and you all tore up that reception. It was they had to almost throw us out. No one wanted mm-hmm. to stop dancing. You all were fabulous. Go on. Come on.
And you gave us such an opportunity. Oh, my gosh, because it was at it was our first, like, we rented white tuxedos, right?
Yes, I remember.
It was at the Tower Suite Time Life building.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
I mean,
yes.
For us to be playing for UB Blake and Lenny Godfrey, it was just like, it was massive for us. So you really gave us such an opportunity for many, many doors to open after that. After that is when we got a manager, and we began to really play statewide, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Essence All Girl Band was, it started because being in high school, I used to bang on the desk, and the girl in front of me said, boy, you always banging and playing. She says, my sister plays too. And I'm like, what? So she says, yeah, she plays drums too. And she connected us, who was Toy Pemberton and me. We became best friends. So Toy was left-handed, I was right-handed. So when we would solo, we would interchange these incredible rhythms, you know?
Mm.
And it was so, and she has passed on. And now, in the whole journey of me drumming, you know, I realized that as an artist, as a performer, as a, you know, a musical therapist and giving the rhythm of life, is that it just instills a powerful path of life because you begin to listen to the truth of your heart, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you listen to your heartbeat, it is your truth. It's when we listen to our heads, we get all jacked up. But when we listen to what our heart is saying, you will get the right answer every time. And I really enjoy that to empower women and children. And I've taught nuns, I've taught lawyer women, I've taught it goes on. And
but
I know
but
that.
Where did the LA, how did we go from Linda to LA? Come on.
Oh, okay. So an Essence All Girl Band, Robin, who introduced me to her sister, that's how we began Essence All Girl Band. When we began mm-hmm. to do our performances and shows, the one time we did a solo, I did my solo, and Robin said, take it away, L.A. And that is
how, and those are your initials.
Those are my initials. And I'm like,
yes,
wow.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm,
it was
mm-hmm.
just you know, really.
And it stuck.
They just stayed with me. Yes.
You all are amazing. Now, Debbie, tell me about the move from New York to Las Vegas. What was that about?
I had no intentions to move to Las Vegas. Totally East Coast, totally all my life, New York. But Mom and Dad moved here in 1993. So when she moved here, the academy closed in New York, okay? We're all, you know, kind of sad, but it's time to move on. Life is based on change. Mommy moves to the West Coast. Mom and Dad are supposed to retire. Gets here, and that's 1993. I'm telling you, Lenny, maybe like the beginning of 1994, my son was here because I was planning sometimes to move here because I was visiting them, yeah, and I was like, what? This is wonderful. This is a these are communities outside of the Strip, you know, beautiful communities. And so I decided, long story short, that I'm going to make that move, right? Mm-hmm. But Mom decided to start an academy here before I even moved because my son was here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my son
was going to UNLV.
A great tap dancer, Brendan Williams. So he was going to UNLV with the intentions that his mom is going to move here and he and I are going to be roommates. But Mom could not wait. Mom started this academy with my son teaching and Chaz Young.
Chaz. I have to talk about Chaz in a little while. Yes, Chaz. Yes.
Chaz Young. I mean, we're all family, man. Chaz said, y'all not leaving me in New York? He decided to move to Vegas.
Yes. So he was very, very instrumental. He was very talk about Chaz a little bit, please.
Oh, my gosh. Chaz Young is now 89 years old. He is the son of Frankie Manning, one of the original Lindy Hoppers from 1926. They were doing Lindy Hop. Frankie Manning created all of this wonderful, wonderful richness of swing dancing. Chaz is his son. So Chaz traveled the world with Norma Miller, tap dancing and doing all kinds of concerts all over the world in Europe. This is how life is. When I was 16 years old, my mother needed a tap dancer at the academy. A friend of a friend of a friend knew of this man who worked in the post office. Guess what? It's Chaz Young. So Chaz Young comes to the academy, talks to my mom. She's like, I'm into children. They need to learn the art. He said, I would love to come on board. He teaches tap classes at the Austin Dancers Academy. I'm 16, learning tap, beginning to learn swing dancing.
Isn't that the influence also that helped you be a consultant for the film?
Absolutely.
Because of his influence, knowing all of those years, knowing how to do that, being around that. I remember going to a couple of your concerts, and he was always, I mean, I know he's still fabulous now. He was just always fabulous on stage. Just an incredible, incredible presence. Don't get me started because, see, now this is what I mean about this. We have already talked a half hour. So we don't have, we have many people who have now, the calls are here. I want everyone to know that if you want to ask a question, this is the time to press one, because we're going to start talking about another phase of their lives, which is your education, working with autistic children, what all of that is about. I want to get that in, and that will take us almost to the end of the program. So I'm just telling everyone now, you're listening well, but don't wait till the last minute, because it's going to be hard for us to answer the questions for you. All right. Now, going into this last little bit that we have to, first of all, talk to me, both of you, about Debbie, you went on to get your MFA in education. So, and now, Linda, I don't know what you've done. All you've done is you've got a doctorate and I know percussion, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, but both of you have been involved in working with autistic children. Where does that come from? How did that evolve?
Oh my goodness. You know what? You know, we as artists, we hustle, right? We hustle, right? So I get here, the Academy is here, and, you know, we're doing that 24/7. And there was someone said something about there is an opening and where you can work part-time. So I was like, oh, for the school district. I'm like, okay, let me just try to go. I go. And long story short, I got hired. Now, this is maybe about 3 or 4 years I'm in this kind of rhythm, but I'm still teaching at the Academy. We do we wear many hats, don't we?
Sure do.
We wear many, many hats. And so I was, you know, meanwhile, you know, dealing in going in classes and helping teachers, right, helping teachers. And they weren't calling me for work a lot. And I was like, you know, what's up? Why you can't call me for some work? And they said, you know what? If you want to work all the time, work in special education classes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had no experience about that field and that, you know, that population. And so I did, and I started just being around students with disabilities. I found them fascinating. They opened up doors in my life that I didn't know existed.
Exactly.
Because challenge, man, when challenge is there, you got to reflect and open up. So that was fascinating to me, Lenny. So for about 3-4 years, I just did that, not thinking about furthering my education, because I got my BA from Hunter. Like, that was okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Like, I'm not going back to school. But it was something, you know, something, and it encouraged me to get my master's. And so I'm like, okay. And I did. And it was one of the hardest times. That's when mommy was getting sick. And so I accomplished that feat, and I graduated in 2017. And became a licensed teacher in special ed with focus on autism.
Okay.
I find it fascinating because it's all about a connection. So the art, this way you got to find out how to communicate authentically from your heart is... It's my arena.
Yes.
And
right.
So,
I think that's the importance for me. I preach every week, and I know people are tired of hearing me say it, but people don't know how important the arts are in our lives, in that it is a portal for a lot of people. It opens the doors for them to have freedom. You know, Joanne, who everyone knows was my sister, if not in blood, always my sister, who had muscular dystrophy all of her life. Her mother was born and could not walk. They carried her, and Joanne could walk until she was 12 years old. But so, and then started having a disability, walking on her toes, and then from a cane to two canes, to the walker, to bedridden. I lived all my life. That was 55 years of living my life with someone who I could see progressively being affected by it, but never, ever giving up because she had music, because she was an artist, because she could draw, because she could sing. You know, how arts were for her, and I am relentless with that. When people say to me when I perform, oh, well, you know, we're going to have some disabled children to come into performance now. Is it going to be all right? I said, oh, bring them, please, because there's a test of time to see if you are really on the mark with your work.
When they believe it, it's real
when they believe it. And when when you understand, you know, the stares and how people will stare at you. Joanne used to say, well, they're staring. I said, no, they're staring at me because they don't understand while I'm with you pushing your wheelchair. I said, you know, she's my sister and I'm with her and it's, you know, we're having a great time shopping. That's it.
That's right.
It's another world that it opens up. And the arts do that for people. And I don't know what it is that makes it important for me to make people understand that we cannot take the arts for granted, that we think it's something that is disposable. It's disposable.
Mm-hmm.
It saves lives, and it's so important.
It sure does.
You know. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Lenny, you know, we truly, I mean, working with autistic children, you truly see and hear the world in a whole different way. Because it's a different variety of a path that you have to take to get to your final, as I call it, my final production, you know. But I don't have a BA in teaching autistic children. I have drumming experience of over 50 years. And that's how I got into Roy Campanella autistic program. And I created a philosophy construct to, you know, let them know that D for drum means dedication, R for repetition, U for understanding, and M was my mission to touch these lives. And through, you know, the formula that really frees autistic children are just barriers of human communication.
Exactly.
And because of their developmental disorder, when rhythm is applied to their lives, it just, they trust you, like they depend on that. So if I went off mark to do something different, no, Ms. L.A., don't go like that. And you're right. It doesn't, because the routine of how you connect to their lives has to be consistent, you know. So in playing those rhythmic patterns that apply to their lives, take me out to the ball game, whatever it might be, it comprehended interpretation for them to really connect. So I just always, my drumming is always my mission to a place where there's an island of success for these children, and it works every time.
Yep. It's a magic. It's the magic. It's the magic of the arts. Now, I want to ask you both this. I want you to consider this. Tell me what is, considering now, you know, you are been doing this for a while. What was the highlight? What is a highlight that you can tell me about in your life at this point? Go ahead, Deb.
Wow.
No.
Highlights. She didn't say highlights. You know, you didn't see that.
Highlights.
Oh, wow.
The best, one of the best memories that you have. What's one of the best memories that you have?
We did a show here in Vegas, and so, you know, the Academy had its history in New York, and so we started here for maybe about a good 4 or 5 years, and we decided to do a show where we would incorporate some of the artists from New York to come to Vegas.
New York comes to Vegas.
Yeah.
So it was this East West Coast kind of communication to make this project successful, where artists would come at the end, maybe that week, and we rehearsed. We had a live band. We were bringing in Linda's drummers, Simply Skins, and we had a script, and we all had to rehearse like crazy to get that project off the ground and successful. And we're dealing with children. So it was the adult. It was children who was passionate about this project. It was called Rhythm De La Soul. And, Lenny, that was one of my, I think, one of my the highlights of bringing all pages, because I believe, you know, the family, there was moms in the production. Their children were in the production. Professional artists came in. So there was this community of creative souls in the mission of uniting and putting forth this project. I think that was one of my highlights.
Sounds fabulous. Wow. What about you, L.A.?
Oh, it's good. There's so many crowning moments, but I have to say that when Simply Skin's Daughters of the Drum, we had the opportunity to play for Nelson Mandela at the United Nations, and it was a dinner, and we played and gave him the ambiance of drumming while he ate, and it was just the idea of this prolific man sitting in front of me, and there was different genres of drummings that were there. They had Native American, they had Latin, but they asked Simply Skins to represent Africa. And so when we was playing for him, he was just so, it was, you could just see that he was enjoying it. Afterwards, he came to me, he says, "Thank you for taking me home." And he said, I really felt that I was back home. And that was just, I mean, no words of the heart couldn't even really, just the appreciation to have those opportunities, and also the many, many musical productions of the Austin Dancers Academy of the 50 years that every year, you know, it was a L.A. connection of whatever genre of music or band or whoever I was with at that time of my life. You know, we were the band. So I just have so many, many experiences of how this drum has taken my life to places that I didn't even, playing for Maya Angelou and opening up for Oprah and playing for her 50th birthday party, always being the drum possession to start things, you know. So I've had many experiences to, you know, express my heart and my love of the passion of my life and my purpose through the rhythm of life, you know.
What do you think between the two of you all, and I'm going to start now with L.A. because I'll give you a minute to think, Debbie. What was the low part? What was the lowest part for you?
The lowest part was just recently. You know, losing mom and dad, and just everything just seemed like it was no more. Everything that involved my drumming and was no more, and my parents weren't here. So I was in a musical at that time that was no more. I couldn't sit down on the couch and put my head on my dad's shoulder. That was no more. My being booked at the Smith Center, they canceled all my contracts. That was no more. All my doors closed. All the drumming facilitations, First Fridays, anything with consultant, any type of security of my heart was no more. And I was devastated. And that's why I had to make the decision to build my studio in my home with my mom and dad. And the spirit is just incredible. So now I have a Rhythm Enterprise studio in my home that is nothing but the energy and the spirit of my parents pushing me all the way to continue the legacy.
To turn the most negative into the most positive. What about you? What about you, Deb?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, the roots of the Austin Dancers Academy, at the helm was my mom, you know, and she's the one that she would make things happen. It just made things happen. And many, I think, of us sometimes when we're all in it, we took it for granted. But the work and the vision and the challenge and the nose and the walls that she faced when she transitioned, it was a growing up time for me, Lenny.
Whenever when they go, changed. you become an adult when they go.
You know what I mean?
I know that very well. I want everyone to contrast those things, and also to for people to see what's next, because I mean, you all both have such incredible presence here about talking about all the projects and what has happened before. So the academy is still going. Linda now has a studio. LA has a studio now. Linda, it's going to take me LA a minute to get
That's
to LA
right.
all the
I
time.
Love you.
But
it's okay.
You know, LA has a studio. What can we expect next? Because I can see, I mean, I feel that there's so much. What legacy do you have coming up next? And we only have a little more than 10 minutes now. See, I told you it was going fast. Tell me, you know, where do you want to go? What projection? What are your goals? Your mother and your father have set that down for you. They gave the aspiration for you and inspiration and foundation, and their spirits are with you. Where are you going now? How do you continue that legacy?
Well, I'll say this, and I'll start because Sis has is recreating. You know what I mean? Recreating. Yeah. When Mom made the transition, the academy transformed big time. Okay, and then the pandemic and all of that. So Sis is creating this studio, and Mom always talked about, you know, and her last kind of wish was, when can we start working with just people with disabilities? And it's interesting that I do that 24/7 every day. And Sis has her drum program for that. So we're kind of knocking heads here and seeing how that is a platform that definitely is needed and expanded.
How do you find the demographic? What do you find the diversity? I know that you have the demographic of disabled students that you're working with, but what other diversity is a challenge now that we are now building back up what it took, you know, 2 years away from a lot of us, the in-person performance, those of us who did things live, you know, finding a new avenues in which to convey the artistry. What did that affect your demographic, your diversity population? How did that affect that?
Absolutely.
Well, for me, Lenny, it's I love diversity. Love diversity because it includes almost like a quality of this difference that really enhances our knowledge. And so with Simply Skins, you know, I had a Latin player, I had a Jamaican player, I had a Japanese player. It wasn't just, you know, your African American, you know, drumming, which people have gotten flack for that, you know. But it opens such a different genre of sound for me that you're not familiar. I love taiko drums, you know, and I just love to be a diversified drummer. I get it constantly from male drummers. You can't play that on a djembe. And I say, watch me. Because why does it have to be this way? And so
now tell
people
what a djembe is. Tell people what djembe is. Tell people.
Djembe is the African drum that is made from the trunk of a tree the shape of an hourglass versus a kunga, right? So in order to really, as far as a lady is concerned, in order to play a djembe, you have to learn technique on a kunga, because djembe is a requirement of power. And so if you don't know technique, you can really hurt yourself. So my mission is to correctly, you know, transition from one style of drumming to another. And then you can incorporate it all. You know, it just doesn't have to be, you know, so.
Yep. What about you, Deb? You know, the diversity of, you know, of the academy, you know, where do you see the academy now emerging now with the studio and what's your demographic goals, you know, for that?
I have been working in for the school district. I choreographed for the show choir there, right? We've been to California, Disneyland, all of that kind of stuff, perform, blah, blah, blah. And I'm teaching drama. And some in many ways, it's a resurgence of me kind of doing some more original stuff with young people. Because when mom transitioned, we sort of closed the doors for a good while. But you know her voice.
She's not gonna let that happen.
Benny, I'm telling you.
Oh, I know your mother. Please. She knows that you needed to have a period of time of adjustment. And then she's like, okay, now, all right, that's enough. Let's go. That's exactly how she would do it. Let's go. Come on. Let's go.
And timing is of everything. So when you called us about this opportunity, I was like, man, mom is all up in this.
You know what is happening is that my mother and your mother are up there plotting and saying, okay, let's get these children working here because they've got to be in unity some kind of way. So this is it's a sort of an introduction of you all now remounting all that you have, all of that wonderful history that you have, but in a new atmosphere, like what we're doing now. This, you know, more than a year ago, I would have never, somebody would have said this, that would, I would have said, you out of your mind. First of all, I have no idea how to do anything like this. But now, here I am, you know. Remounting of that. And I think that that's a very important thing that, you know, that has to happen. And, and it will. That's the most important thing, because the spirit is there. The goal of both of your parents, of their being consistent, and the longevity of both of their lives and their relationships and their love for the arts lives through you. It lives through
you. That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And you just have to find the path as to how to express it in the life that we have today. Everything is changing, and nothing is exactly the way it was many, many moons ago when your son and daughter were both in my wedding, and now they're parents.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's an amazing thing, but I think it's something that we have to acknowledge, that change does happen, and with the influence of those of us that we've been blessed to have the support of family.
Mm.
And now we have to take the support and move it on, and just move it on to another level. That's what I'm going to expect from you, and I'm going to expect that you all will come back next year this time, and I will, and we'll have a conversation about where you all are.
That's right, Lenny.
I love that.
Putting
it out for the challenge.
Yes, because it's absolutely necessary. You know, the arts is a forward looking forward. Seeking thing, and it doesn't stay the same. If the world changes, we have to change with it, but we still bring with us all those principles and desires and pictorial histories that we learned as younger people, and we pass that on. We have that's our job. Now it's my job to say that we are down to the last minute and a half, of which I have to say to everyone that we are going to continue this on the after show, Afterthoughts, on video. And these two wonderful ladies will appear on camera, and you will be able to. And I'm hoping somehow that LA will have a drum somewhere that we can see.
Yeah.
And
you will be able to see it.
Thank you very much. And that Debbie will be able to continue a conversation about the influence of how she has really mastered working with disabled children through the dance, through that movement. And it's always been a consummate professional in that area. So we're going to continue that conversation on video. You all have the information that you need, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
I just want to mention, Lenny, that I'm in a musical production called This is a Man's World, and it's going to be at the Smith Center on February 20th, 2022. So it's a wonderful show.
All right. Well, and we'll talk about that more, too, on the video. We'll make sure.
Okay.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. You're welcome. Thank you all for coming in. We'll see you in a few minutes. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Lenny Gottfried Straight No Chaser. Really, the reunion of this relationship, having not spoken to you all for a little while, and then I get a chance to see you in a little bit, it's been absolutely wonderful for me. So thank you very much. I'll see you all in a little bit. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We've got 90 seconds left. Thank you, all the callers. The callers are off the board, so you've got a wonderful audience who've been listening to you. So thank you very much, and we'll see you next week. We have Alexis Reyes, who is the personification of the Brooklyn Diner in New York City, and I can't wait. We used to work together as performers. We'll see you next week, and I'll see you on the radio. Lenny Gottfried, Straight No Chaser. Yeah.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night.